Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with greed. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. Can you believe that it is actually almost December? It's going to be December tomorrow. It's unbelievable how quickly 2018 has gone into the rearview mirror. But I hope you learned some things over the course of that incredibly long year. I mean, I guess they're all the same length, but you know, emotionally they feel different, that's for sure. I've had a lot of things happen this year that have really been eye-opening. I've learned a lot about myself, as a matter of fact. I effectively started this podcast in January, and it all started with a basic idea. I knew that I wanted to start having some conversations with people about this stuff. This stuff that's really been very close to me for most of my life. But here's a fun fact about all of that. The first thing I did wasn't decide I'm going to start a podcast. The first thing I did was go looking for somebody else's podcast that I could listen to. And just, you know, get all of the wisdom and knowledge and everything of the universe and just apply it to my life so that I didn't have to go talk to anybody. Because I'd much rather strap on some earbuds than have an actual conversation with a person. And it's not because I don't like people. It's because all my life I've kind of felt like a visitor in a person's suit. I don't feel connected to people. I feel really disconnected from people. And I'm sure a big chunk of that is my own fault in a lot of ways. Because when you know that about yourself, and you don't take active steps to correct it, in fact, you go the other direction, and you take active steps to avoid it, you're not fixing anything. So I started listening to other podcasts, and you know what? They just weren't doing what I wanted them to do. They weren't talking about mental illness from my experience, from my perspective. And I still felt alone. And so I thought, why not just start my own show? And sometimes when you don't see yourself represented in the way that you need to be represented, maybe the best thing to do is just go out and represent yourself. And that's exactly what I did. And I learned a lot of stuff in this time period. And I've become a better listener, a better person. And I'm still struggling with everything. You know, trying to be a better friend, trying to be a better partner, a better companion, a better pal. It's a constant process. Now, all of that said, this podcast has made me feel more connected with other human beings than I've ever felt ever. And the conversation that I had that you'll be hearing today with Emma Dawn is an example of this. We had a really fantastic conversation, and it goes a little long. And I was looking for areas to cut it, and once again, I just didn't see any logical place to cut this thing down. So if you need to pause it and come back to it, feel free. It's a podcast. That's the beautiful thing about all of this. It's like an incredibly intimate conversation that you can put down and come back to, right where you left off. Now, without further ado, my conversation with Emma Dawn. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I mean, despite the cold and all, but
yeah,
I'm just really happy it's Friday. I'll say that much.
Yeah, that's not an understatement. I noticed that, not to jump right into things, but I did notice in looking at the amount of work that had to have gone in to that record you guys made.
Yeah.
You've got to be exhausted.
Well, the good news is now we're done with it all. and not to say that it wasn't an amazing experience, but with any project, of course, if it's worthwhile, it's usually going to wear you out a little bit.
Yeah.
But that is something, I believe we started tracking drums like last December, so it's already been a year since we really started recording.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these songs were ones that we already had very well established. A lot of them were from very early on in the band. Several of them were before I was even a part of the band, for some reference, I suppose. But so it wasn't like we had to write anything. This was mostly, we wanted to wrap up. This was a really good end to a chapter in, I think, our development. So that's been really nostalgic for us, but also just a relief, because now we can show everyone what we've been doing, obviously, up until this point.
Let's go back even farther. When did you first start playing an instrument?
My first instrument was actually a violin when I was probably 10 or 11. I'm not sure exactly, but I guess for some reference, I've been singing, and this is like probably my favorite fact about myself, is that I've been singing since before I can remember things, because I had a very musical grandpa, and anytime we went to go visit, he would put me on the microphone to like sing little children's songs. And but once I got far enough along in school and I'd been in choir for a couple of years, you know, there was a couple of programs that became available, and I decided that I wanted to play the violin because I was inspired by Celtic music, actually.
Yeah.
So I started there, and then very quickly picked up the trumpet because it had three whole buttons on it. That's all I had to worry about. But figured out pretty fast that I was actually pretty okay at it, and really enjoyed it, and stuck around in band. But I have a very hard time sticking with any one thing for too long, so I ended up very quickly learning to teach. I taught myself how to play piano, because I already knew how to read music, and I just got reference for what notes were what on the piano, and spent like a summer teaching myself how to play video game music in junior high. Of course. Started taking guitar lessons, and then just kind of started collecting all kinds of a bunch of little things like jaw harps and harmonicas, and I've got a set, they're called bones, but it's like a Celtic instrument that it's kind of like spoons when they have that reciprocal clicking
yeah.
thing going on, but as you twist your wrist, it brings out triplets.
Huh.
And they were originally made out of bones, but now usually they sell them in wood.
Well, I mean, that's a really eclectic
mm-hmm.
range of instruments
oh.
to go through. And most people don't decide from violin to trumpet.
Most people don't.
that's not a real natural progression for a lot of people. I mean, what led you there? Like,
well, I knew that, and I've spent a lot of time trying to remember this, but my mom used to be a musician as well when she was, she actually went to school to be a music education major for one whole semester.
Mm-hmm.
But she was at least a little bit musically active in church, and she was a wind player, but I just wanted to be in a music program at school, and band just kind of was like the logical step. And I remember filling out a form in fifth grade as, like, what kind of skills I had. I remember it asked me, like, what lip shape I had. And that was a really weird question to think about as a fifth grader.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know.
It's a weird question now.
It's exactly. It's a very weird question now. But at the very bottom, it listed, like, what your three top instruments would be. And I believe I chose percussion, flute, because that was what my mom played, and trumpet, and they just needed trumpet players. So,
So you just said, let's do that then.
Yeah, and it worked out, and I've never looked back.
Because it adds a real dimension to the music that
you
guys are doing. And it's unusual in, I guess in this day and age, for most of the people that I know, the moment you introduce any sort of horns to a rock band, mm-hmm. and you're not a ska band, it's like, what the fuck is this?
Well, that's kind of the point, though.
Yeah, and I was going to say, there's a lot of intention in these songs that you can see. And I feel like when I was listening to the record, that it has this quality to it that it's something that I've heard before. And it's not like your influences are right there on the sleeve. It sounds like this is a lost gem that I just found now. And you sound like you. Like, oh, I know this band. I've heard this band. But I cannot put my finger anywhere on where this came from. So was that intentional?
Well, not really, but... Thank you. That's a really great compliment. I appreciate that a lot. And it's kind of been the trend as far as, like, that album goes. We've had several people describe it using the word nostalgic.
Yeah.
And I think we're still trying to put together exactly why that is, but I think it's just maybe the earnesty of, like, what we're doing and just the authenticity in a way.
Yeah.
You know, possibly it is that little tiny bit of, like, maybe it's not the most amazingly produced record ever, but not necessarily in a bad way, but,
yeah.
You know, it still kind of reminds you of how records in, like, the 80s and 90s sounded. And then I think, too, the trumpet just kind of does that because it kind of went away for a while. Everybody was really excited about electronic sounds.
Right.
And now
this sounds really organic. I mean, just people in a room.
Which is more or less how we write, especially anymore. I mean, maybe not so much with all of these songs, but definitely all of these songs have been developed. Like, All I've Got is a really good example. That was something that we had recorded as a demo before I was even a part of the band. They actually recorded this, and that recording is a very different song than it is now. Like, we've changed keys, we've changed tempos.
Yeah.
I'm now singing it instead of Riley. Several things, and it ends up having a very different sound because of the work that we put into it. Anytime that we write as a group. It's not ever something that we present to the bands. We're like, hey, I wrote a song, you're going to play this part, you're going to play this part. It's really important to us, and it has always been important to us, to make sure that it's a Fat Stallion product and not just, like, a Jack Elliott product or a Light product or an Emma product. Like,
well, and that's not that hard to do if you have good communication with your bandmates, too. Because even though you're all coming from places with different influences and things, that's how you make the soup.
Exactly.
It all just comes together to sound like you, no matter what it is you're doing, as long as you all kind of know what it is the end product is supposed to sound like.
And it's funny because, like, I'm not really sure if we knew for a while, but I think that we all understood that there was something there that was clicking and that we were... all very, I guess, earnestly, again, we all really wanted this to work from the very beginning. And we've definitely become very close friends over the past few years. But, like, when these songs were written, you know, we were all, of course, very different people. That was long enough ago now. We were still young enough that it was a drastic enough time frame.
Right.
And so I don't know if we knew, but I think that we're very fortunate. And that's something that we really try to develop and really try to nurture as a group. It is very important for us to communicate and to, but to still allow us each to be individuals.
Yeah. Well, and you can tell that everybody brings a little something because everybody has individualistic fingerprints on things.
Yes.
And that chorus on All I've Got is money. It's,
it's, I think so.
it's really solid. That's
Thank
I mean
you.
That's what hooked me. And I listened to the rest of the album because the first blast of the opening of the album, just that in your face, everyone coming at it all at once, and the horns kick in, and you're like, whoa, okay, something's going on here. There's more than three people happening here, and I like that, and so that'll always catch my attention. And then that chorus came in, and it's so solid, and it's familiar without being trite.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked that. And I also liked, because I was trying to put my finger on where I think I know that from. You know, the style and the influence and what it reminds me of. Because it's always good to be able to point at something and say, this reminds me of this.
Yes.
And I can't. I can't put my finger on it. I can't quite put my finger on it. It's kind of been driving me crazy.
Well, good news. We've got more coming out, so you can add to the pile.
Well, good. That'll be great. So going back to learning how to play all those instruments, I mean, what kind of a life leads a person to do those things? What kind of a kid were you?
Well, I was several different kids. I have a lot of people have told me stories about when I was very, very young before. And I don't really remember these times, but I used to be incredibly outgoing. And I would travel a lot with my mom to go to business conventions and stuff. But I was a little tiny girl that would walk up with her little cup of juice to other little tiny girls and go, "Hi, I'm Emma. Want to play?" And like, and then I went to school, and then that just kind of stopped. I'm not really sure, because I don't really remember. There wasn't really a specific event. I don't know if it was just like the environment or what it was, but that I became very introverted and quiet for quite a long time. And I was the kid who would say, "Oh, my mom said I can't hang out," even though she wasn't really a part of the, it was never something I brought up with my mom.
Right.
How
old were you when that started happening?
I'd say probably like first and second grade, like still pretty young, but
right.
But
that's, I believe that that's when some of your self-awareness as a person starts setting in.
A little bit.
Is right
yeah.
around that age. I mean, that 5-6 years old, your object permanence is mostly in place, you know, and
yeah.
so you start making decisions about what the world is and what to expect from it. So it is curious that it would be right around that time that would change so drastically.
Well, and something that I've looked on to when I've like thought about the past and like tried to like think about, you know, remember what I could remember very intentionally and like think about what I was feeling and like, you know, try to remember interactions. I was a very spacey kid too. Like I did really well in school on the whole, like, but I would consistently forget events. I was like very in my own little world. And I think that kind of went out to my interactions with like the other students, 'cause I wasn't terribly interested. I remember going to like a sleepover in second grade, and I realized many years later that I got invited so that the other girls could like joke about me being there and tease me behind my back and, you know, things like that. But in the moment, it didn't
Kids
even...
Kids are great, right?
Oh, man, I know. But in the moment, it didn't really even occur to me. Like, it wasn't really something I was aware of. You know, you mentioned, like, being self-aware, but, like, I don't think I truly started being aware of, like, who I was and my decisions until probably, like, 5th or 6th grade. And that's, you know, there's a lot of things that, like, I wish I could have done earlier on in my life as far as personal development, but, you know, we're here now, so.
Yeah. I mean, you arrived somewhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of that makes sense when, I mean, you mentioned that you were a decent student, you did well, so, I mean, that certainly wasn't a problem, but if you've got the, mindset to be able to pick up all these different instruments and especially piano, and say, well, mm-hmm. I can transpose this and this and teach it to myself. I mean, that speaks to a certain element in the brain that says, mm-hmm. I'm capable of learning.
Yes.
Congratulations, you're yes. blessed with this thing. But there's also not really a big surprise in the fact that you spaced out on a lot of stuff, because I mm-hmm. bet a lot of things just weren't that interesting how quick your brain was processing things.
Well, and I'd like to think that. But as far as, like, learning things goes, I would find something, and I was very much an obsessor in the moment. And I suppose a really good example of that is, like, when I was in college, because I went to school as a music education major as well. And I'd been going for a couple of years. I was part of the women's choir, and I had been accompanying the choir on some guitar songs and some other things, because we were mostly a cappella, but, like, very occasionally I'd pull out the guitar to help everyone, because I was, like, the one person in the room with a guitar, surprisingly enough. I don't know how that happened, but I remember one day she handed out a piece of music, and just to add on to the list of weird instruments that I've got, my mom, for Christmas, kind of out of the blue, got me a hammer dulcimer, which is a really super neat string instrument.
Yeah.
And this particular one wasn't amazing, and it was pretty old. It's just, like, a very basic student model, but it still has, like, 48 strings to tune.
Yeah, sure.
And it's kind of like a percussion instrument, because you have the hammers that you hit it with, but it's very much like a Celtic. There's also, like, Appalachian versions of this instrument as well. And so she got me that as a Christmas present while I was in college, but I just never had the time to actually learn it. But anyway, I got handed this piece of music, and I noticed almost immediately that the accompaniment was for hammer dulcimer. And she goes, yeah, Kylie, do you think you can play this on the piano for us? And I'm like, well, so I have a hammer dulcimer, because this was, like, just before winter break, too. And she's like, well, do you know how to play that? I'm like, not yet. And that was, like, more or less my permission. So I went home over that break, and I played a lot while I was back home, and I brought it back to college with me, and pretty much all of my free time was spent playing that, because it was something new, and it was something interesting, and because I had, like, an end goal for it. I had a piece to learn and ideally memorize, because that instrument in particular is very difficult to read music and play at the same time. I think it's just because, like, you're not using your fingers to touch each of these places. You're using hammers, so
yeah.
It's very visually based, at least for me. Like, I didn't take any lessons. I just kind of did it. But I think that kind of speaks to how I've approached every instrument that I played. I'll pick something up, and I'll be really excited to learn it. I get really motivated when I'm learning something new, but man, do I hate practicing. Like, this is something my parents have lamented for years. It's like, oh, Kylie, you would be so, you know, you're so good right now, but you would imagine where you'd be if you'd actually spend time practicing. And I just thought practicing was the most boring waste of time in the whole world, and I just hated doing it.
Sure.
You know? But, you know, theoretically, what's the difference between learning a new instrument and practicing? But because you're still doing the same thing over and over again in an attempt to learn it, but, you know, it's just, like, I think a difference in mindset, and even just that amount really determined how much energy I was able to give anything, and, like, apply this to anything in life. This is as far as my life goes. But
were you an only child?
I do have a younger brother. He's almost 4 years younger than me, so kind of,
yeah.
When we were really little, we played a lot, and we kind of had a relationship for a while. But basically, once he and I were both in school, it just, because we never were at the same school, we always went to different schools for one reason or another. We didn't go to the same elementary school, you know, and then I was in middle school, and then junior high, and then high school. And then we went to high school together for 1 year.
Yeah.
And then I moved away to go to college. And it wasn't really until then until I feel like I truly developed my relationship with my brother.
Yeah. I don't have any scientific basis for any of this, but I feel like all of the people that I talk to that have this kind of personal drive And a lot of the little things that you've said in your sentences remind me very much of a person who is either an only child or the oldest child. And so, I mean, again, I don't have any science to back any of that up, but it is a personality trait that fascinates the hell out of me. I think that's so interesting. Because I was the youngest, and I never wanted to do anything.
Yeah. On that note, my brother and I are very different people.
I bet. So growing up like that with just you and your brother kicking around with your folks, throwing hammers and strings at you to play. I mean, I can't even have a frame of reference for what that must have been like in that house. Like, were all those instruments just kicking around?
I mean, more or less. We had a piano that was given to us by our adopted grandma, who was somebody who was very close to my mom. She gave my parents a stand-up player piano, I think, as a wedding present. I don't remember that for certain, but that's something that my parents have had for a very long time. And so I've always just had a piano in the house. Wasn't something that I was necessarily compelled to play early on, but definitely started with my voice. And then as soon as I learned how to play music or how to read music, and I was like, oh, well, now I can just apply that to everything I ever do. Like, there's nothing I can't, you know, if I have the opportunity, if I have the instrument. Because once I started picking up these instruments, I think the really neat thing that happened is I re-inspired my mom. So once I started playing the violin, and then ultimately, I think about the time I started playing the trumpet was when she finally pulled her flute back out, like, and started going to the college in town and working with the flute group, and then we ended up joining the community band together while I was going to school, and the orchestra as well. So, like, we ended up getting to play music together and really develop that, which is something, like, in retrospect that I'm really grateful I got to do.
Yeah.
You know, because it wasn't until much later that I learned that, like, my mom went to school, as I said, for a semester, and while she was there, the flute professor told her that she would never get anywhere in life, and just, there was absolutely no encouragement whatsoever.
Well, that's a great thing to say to a person.
Yeah.
An educator.
So, she ended up leaving and going back home and getting married and, you know, yada yada blah blah, but, and then just kinda, she would sing in choir at church, and, like, very, very occasionally would end up playing the flute, but it was something that it took a lot of time to help, like, reassure her that, like, yes, like, you're doing a good job. You're a good flute player.
Yeah.
You know, people look up to you. You're, a leader in the music community here, like, and so that was a really neat thing to go through, like, alongside my mom in retrospect, that, you know, we both were working on our skills and we were both working on our self-esteem, you know, as far as music is concerned.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as that happened, we just kind of, you know, my brother ended up picking up the guitar about the same time I was taking lessons, and my dad for a birthday ended up getting a bass guitar, and there for a very short amount of time we were going to start a family band.
Oh, great.
It was about a month that yeah, really lasted, just because none of us can really hang on to anything for very long. There's a trend here, but...
So there's no Partridge Family style recordings out there of you guys hitting the road in a van and...
I think that was kind of the idea, but, like, my brother and I both just weren't really in it out of our own free will. I guess we'll put it that way.
Well,
we were doing it, but it was like, why are we doing this? You know? But, like, that being said, like, that was something that kind of happened throughout our whole family. And so basically whenever I wanted to try something new, I bought my first guitar, with money, cause I was working through high school after school. And of course having the piano at home, and I got a lot of knick-knack. Yeah, so that's really what they are at the end of the day. I got a lot of knick-knack instruments as well. But
yeah, like the kind of stuff you can fit in your hand and throw in a backpack real easy.
Exactly. So, but it was something that I really, really enjoyed, like, along with, like, Celtic flute. As I mentioned, like, Celtic music was the reason I wanted to be an instrumentalist from the very beginning. And then so I got into orchestra. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we had several tin whistles kind of floating around the house, and a couple of like Native American flutes, like up on the piano. My mom had a pan flute up on the piano that if I was really good, she'd let me play. And you know, things like that, that I don't know if I necessarily put very much energy into that, but I definitely was not ever discouraged from going in a new direction as far as music was concerned. But
so the obvious question in all of this, at least I think it's the obvious question, is with that many personalities drawn to playing instruments, is there any history of mental illness in your family?
Yep. So this funny thing happened when I went to college, and in my sophomore year, I had this one day after just several months of like not good days when I woke up, and I finally had one good day, and it put the entire very gradual downhill of the last like 3 or 4 months into perspective, and I went, holy shit, I gotta go to the doctor. Like, I realized just how depressed I had become.
Yeah.
And because it's not like an overnight thing. And of course, some of these things I realized much later on were symptoms that I experienced, like, even as early on as junior high. But I grew up in Wyoming in a very small town. So logically, the next step of that is I didn't get very much emotional education.
Hmm.
And I didn't.
Yeah, small towns are like that.
Yeah, and so, like, I appreciate that you think that I am aware of this, but this has been, a very recent thing for me that I've really tried very hard to, like, look back on, like, what I went through and what I experienced and to acknowledge the emotions that I had ignored because I didn't understand, because there was no reference for me to understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I realized that I had been experiencing these symptoms for years. After finally, like, looking into it, because it had never occurred to me to even look. And I go to the doctor, and what do you know? I had been diagnosed with severe depression and anxiety. And it was funny, because that was, like, the best day of my life, like, that whole year.
Yeah.
I left, and I literally felt like I could, like, just float away. Because suddenly, everything that I had been experiencing and feeling guilty for and not understanding, I could finally separate from myself and, like, look at objectively.
Yeah.
And, like, logically, hopefully. I'm a very logical person. Like, I'm very math-brained, actually.
Right.
So it's funny to me that I have been so creative, because I'm always so creative very logically. But
right. No, but that that tracks. Mm-hmm. That absolutely tracks. I can see that, because mm-hmm. There's that thing that can occur when your mind works that way, where you're, it's almost like you're trying to solve this emotional puzzle
mm-hmm.
with intelligence.
Yes.
And so you get to that point where you feel like, you go to the doctor and they're like, anxiety and depression. And you're like, yes, the Rubik's Cube is solved.
Yes.
The trouble is...
now what?
Well, yeah. Once you feel like you've solved the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
it should go away. And it does not.
Yeah. Well, and I guess, like, to answer your question, as soon as I was diagnosed and I had some time to process things, like, I called my mom. Because what else do you do when you are presented a new problem in college and you're out there by yourself? Like, help. Mom! And found out that she and her mom and her mom have all been on antidepressants. So, like, my great-grandmother was on, like, the very earliest form of antidepressants, like, back in... And I wish I knew specific dates, because I personally would find that very interesting. I can't ask now, but it was one of those things where I was like, Mom, why on earth didn't you tell me this? Like, I had no idea. Like, how would I have known to, like, ask you about this, you know?
Right.
But,
well, because small town. I mean,
exactly.
People don't talk about
they
things like that.
Don't talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that... You know, and I suppose we could maybe get to that later, but there's just so much that, like, doesn't get talked about in the human experience. Everyone's like, all right, do this thing, go home, I don't care. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's pretty much my early education in a nutshell.
Yeah. Rub some dirt on it. And
if
it's really bad, just take a few deep breaths and then try to pretend that it's not there.
Exactly. So I just had no reference to compare any of, like, what I was going through. So once I learned that, it was just such an amazing thing for me. That's actually very shortly after I decided to get my first tattoo, which is of a butterfly behind my ear, which is actually a reminder to me that, like, if I realize that I haven't been feeling that way for a while, because I don't know if I'll ever forget that memory, like walking down the sidewalk. There are very few things that I actually remember long term, and this is something I wish I could be better about, but I don't know if I'll ever forget, like, that walk down the sidewalk, like looking around the sunset and that feeling that goes with it. Like, I have been separated from what is afflicting me, and I can be above that, and I can begin to address this. I can begin to work on this problem now that I have a direction.
Yeah.
And so this tattoo is a reminder to me that if I don't feel that way again, if it is a gradual change again, and I don't notice it immediately, especially, you know, that something's wrong and I need to readdress it. You know, that I can feel this way, that this is a possibility.
Yeah.
Because I have experienced it.
And those things are so important, mm-hmm. those touchstones, and figuring out where mm-hmm. your touchstones are. I mean, for me, I had thought I had gone through all of the process, and, and you know, I came out the other side more or less with all the right tools to be able to manage my depression, my anxiety, mm-hmm. Everything. And you know, some of them worked better than others, but they were all right. there. And mm-hmm. Then I got the geographic cure of moving here.
Oh, thank goodness.
Which was great.
Colorado has been amazing.
It is amazing.
I would completely agree with you. Moving to Colorado was one of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Me
hands
too.
Down.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I said the completely tactless thing to someone before, and this is probably the worst thing I've ever said on this podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. So I'm bracing myself for you to hate me from across the table. But the thing that I said was, if someone had offered me to move back to my hometown, making the same money I do here, mm-hmm. And I mean, to put it in perspective, like, I had a house in my hometown that I owned, and it mm-hmm. cost me $20,000. And so, I mean, it was a terrible place with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about the things. It's about the people and the mm-hmm. and the mindset. And I always felt small there. I always felt broken. I always felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was offered that chance, I said to the guy, if my mom dies, I will send flowers. And that
is
literally the worst thing I've ever said in my life. I know, obviously, I don't relate. Yeah, I can't ever take myself back. I just can't.
I'm not ever going back there.
In fact, I actually don't talk to most of my family anymore. Although I do talk to my mom.
Yeah.
As much as it's difficult sometimes for me. Yeah. But it sounds like you've got a pretty decent relationship with your parents, at least.
Yeah, and as I was mentioning earlier, like, it was definitely a thing that once I moved away, that's when things really started to happen.
Yeah.
As far as my relationship with my family, which was really interesting. And I think, honestly, at a very basic level, we just took each other completely for granted.
Yeah.
You know, and as soon as I left, then my only interaction with them was verbal communication, which, in retrospect, again, really didn't happen growing up. If it was, I was being told what to do, you know, like, because you're a kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was like after I left, and about the time my brother became an adult, you know, was when he and I really started actually talking. Because, I mean, there's also this thing when I was actually just watching a podcast with the band not too long ago. And we were just talking about it on the drive down here, is that Joe Rogan was talking about, like, teenagers, like, you got to give them some slack because they're trying to figure out how to talk. You know, they just kind of say things and hope it works out. And, like, it's, you know.
yeah.
And, like, that's very much a thing, because, like, we were all so, in a way, it's like, so above dealing with people like that. So, like, I didn't really give my brother very much time, and ultimately my parents didn't really give us very much time because we were like that. We weren't talk to-able. Like, you know, like, you're a teenager, and we weren't very emotionally developed or, you know, in some ways mentally, but not really. You know, there's a lot of that. Again, like, I only feel like I've actually become an adult, like, since I moved to Colorado. All of this emotional development, all of this, like, really very thorough retrospective thinking has come ultimately after we moved to Colorado, and I could place everything that happened in Wyoming into perspective.
Yeah.
So, oh shoot, train of thought.
did you go the medication route as well?
I did, very briefly. I tried a couple of things. So, like, I got diagnosed fairly early on in the spring. Mm-hmm. And I tried, it ended up being like 3 or 4 different medications.
Yeah.
You get all of like the standard ones that right off the bat, like Zoloft and whatever else. And it either made me sick or did nothing every single time.
Yeah, and it doesn't work for everybody.
And so that was like my signal that I'm not going to do this if it's not going to immediately improve what I'm experiencing and there's this, like, absolute shit list of things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, absolutely. You know what improves everything immediately? Xanax. you know what else can be a real problem? Xanax.
Yeah, I would imagine. I can't speak to any experience there, but yeah.
Well, I mean, imagine this, and this is the way I can explain it to anyone so that you would understand how insane this stuff must be. Mm-hmm. Imagine the worst thing you've ever gone through in your life, and then you take one Xanax, and now all of that, it still exists, but it's over there, and you don't feel high.
Hmm.
Right. You feel normal. Everything feels like it's supposed to, and you don't feel high.
That's weird.
Right. Hmm. And so that's very addicting, feeling normal.
As it turns out, it's like that's what everybody tells you should feel like at any given moment.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the other side of things is like, I think humans in general are very scared of feeling things.
Yeah.
Especially right now. Like, I think culturally right now, it's like, of course, there's always to some degree, like throughout each decade, there's like a version of this, but
sure. But I don't know if there has been in my lifetime. I haven't seen the weirdness we're looking at right now. It's
things have been a little, seems extra a little weird bleak. So, I actually was just watching another video where a guy was talking about, he had been questioned about gun control and what he was going to do to help stop these school shootings. And, well, of course, I didn't agree with everything he said. He did make a very solid point to just bring up the fact that this is a bigger issue than we're trying to make it. We're trying to find the simplest answer to move forward. And that, and this is something that I still believe, I feel like there's a handful of steps, in my opinion, that we could, I don't know, I'm not the guy to ask, you know what I mean? But, you know, he really made a point to bring up that we need to address what's causing people to think this way, how we are devaluing human life.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a joke on the internet, like, how little, like, Gen Z kids value their own lives.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to die right now, and, like, that is so common, it's a meme, which is completely unacceptable.
Well, people are finally coming around to this idea that, well, that's an option.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, it honestly, it always was,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, that's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
It really, just because something is an option, mm-hmm. doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Exactly. So, this guy just really put a lot of time into reminding everyone that, like, people want to kill other human beings for reasons, not because they have the ability.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something I very, very much agree with, and something that he touched on that really resonated with me is that, like, one of the reasons that this happens is, like, maybe the lack of emotional availability of parents. you know, whether or not that's because they are physically separated from their kids, like they're busy working their butts off trying to like pay for the house, or if they're an abusive situation or whatever else it is.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, and this is something I struggled with for quite a while, is like, I grew up comfortable. I grew up in a very standard nuclear four-person family. You know, my parents are a male and a female, and they had two perfect children, a girl and a boy. And, like, we grew up, and we were never really worried about our finances and everything else.
Yeah.
So I get to this point where I'm like, nothing really has ever, like, happened to me that was bad. There's not, like, a thing that I can really point out that was, like, compared to, say, some of the other kids I went to school with. I was aware of some of the things that were going on. Like, I went to school with a girl whose parents were meth heads, you know, for as one small example.
Yeah.
So I had the perspective that I had no reason to be sad. I had no reason to feel anything. Anything other than perfect and happy and good. And that wasn't what was happening. So, you know, it's especially to look back and realize that, like, I grew up in a daycare where, again, in retrospect, pretty sure I was being made fun of the entire time while I was off doing my own thing and in my la-la land. And I really, really didn't start to interact with my parents until much later on, once I was old enough to be home alone, I suppose. And then, like, through high school, and of course you have the event where you, like, try to run away because your parents suck, and, like, you know. but then, as I mentioned before, like, my relationship with my parents didn't really happen until I became an adult, and, like, that family hierarchy shifted. It was a funny thing, because my mom actually started calling me by my aunt's name once that happened, and my brother by my dad's name, and then they would call the dogs our names. Which, again, was like, huh, that's kind of a funny thing to notice. Like, you know, it very much was like a hierarchy situation. So it was an indicator to me that whether or not it was intentional, conscious, or malicious, anything else, until that point, we were very much our parents' possessions and their pets.
Sure.
You know. So that's been kind of something, a very interesting thing to try and accept and, like, I guess, forgive. And that seems like maybe an overreaction, because, like, again, it was never like I wasn't loved.
No, we have different words for different reasons. Yes. I mean, forgive is a solid. It's a net positive. It's not a negative word, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it comes from a negative place. Like, you did this awful thing, and I have to forgive you. But I mean, if someone did something that, you know, made an impact, even if it was accidental, you don't harshly judge someone for their accidents. Forgiveness is good. Forgiveness is ultimately a good thing. And I think that there's like you said, growing up and feeling the way that you felt about, you know, once you discovered the depression, and, like, you get that imposter syndrome where you feel like you didn't earn it. But it doesn't discriminate, and it doesn't come from that place. And obviously you know that now, but if you look back, you can see the ways in which that may have colored your interactions with your parents and with your friends and with your siblings, because while many other people may not have certain aspects of that emotional intelligence that comes from being in your own head all the time.
Yeah. That's where I lived.
You did. You had that thing where, and a lot of depressive people do. I think most depressive people do. Mm-hmm. You're in your own head a lot. And it can be difficult to have a connection with other human beings at all until you start to be able to connect with that part of yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you're fighting that part of yourself and saying, this shouldn't be here, this is out of place, this isn't right, and you're focusing on that while everything is going on around you.
Yep.
It can kind of fuck things up.
A little bit. That's definitely a thing. So the interesting thing, too, that I've really only recently, like, truly comes to terms with is that I actually also grew up as an asexual child. So I didn't know this was a thing until, like, my junior year of college. It never even occurred to me.
Well, why would it?
Exactly. You know, you grow up, there were a couple of, like, the gay kids at school, and, like, there were rumors about, like, well, that girl's hanging out with that girl, you know? And I never had a problem with that. I never held issue with that, you know? That wasn't ever something that, like, bothered or confused me at all. Like, that was something I immediately accepted. I'm like, yeah, cool, they're them, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't ever something that troubled me, but I had, again, this was a case of I had never been exposed to the idea that this could be a thing. So, of course, everybody hits puberty, and everyone's like, ooh, you know, they're hot.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about these other kids that are wandering around in high school and everything else. And I'm like, well, I don't think I understand what you mean.
Yeah. You know, Is it symmetry?
I'm like, well, you know, that girl has really nice hair. Like, you know, I can tell and I can appreciate that some people are very visually appealing. Like,
yeah.
You know, some people are, like, pretty, and some people are, like, not pretty, but everybody's like, you know, that wasn't ever something that I, like, worried about when I was interacting with other people as well. It was just a descriptor of how their shape was, you know.
You know,
you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But all of these, you know, people are like, wow, you know, like, that person's really hot, or, like, I want to date that person, or, you know, when all this stuff came up, again, it just was like, I don't really understand what you mean by that.
Yeah.
And
your id just wasn't wired the same way.
Exactly. So I spent a very, very long time, basically the entirety of my junior high and high school and beginning of college years, trying to figure out how to fix myself. Trying to figure out what everybody else meant. And, you know, like, so for a while, I was like, you know, and I, like, did research on this. I remember, you know, like, I was on, like, dial-up. It was long enough ago. Like, looking up some things, and I found, like, demisexual. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's, like, what's going on. I just have to find the right person. I have to find the right person, and I have to be in love with them, and then it'll work.
Yeah.
And it didn't. You know, it never did. And so that, of course, didn't really help my relationship with the people in school because, again, retrospectively, everyone's like, wow, what's up with her? She's bouncing around, you know?
Yeah.
But I was so obsessed because I think it was a combination of trying to solve, like, this problem and trying to figure out what my situation was, but also being very lonely.
Yeah. You know? There's that science brain again. You know, just looking, experimentation, documentation, and forming your thesis.
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, like this, like eagerness, need, almost like I was the very needy girlfriend in a lot of ways, but for a long time, it put me in a lot of bad places and that certainly didn't help things because I ended up putting myself in situations where I was abused. And whether it was emotionally or physically in, like, this particular kind of situation, I don't think any of that helped my mental state as far as my depression goes.
Yeah.
While
the depression may not be something that was, you know, of your choosing or of your doing, there are certainly outside factors that can exacerbate it.
Very much. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, I was in a class. It was, like, called Pop Culture and Sexualities, which was actually one of my favorite classes I took while I was in college. It was great. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, again, this was, like, a very clear memory of mine. Like, this girl went up to the front, and she showed us, her presentation was on Steven Universe.
Huh.
It was great, and that was what introduced me to that cartoon, which we absolutely love. And if you haven't seen it, I very, very highly recommend it.
I'm hearing that a lot lately.
Very, very highly recommend it. It's absolutely worth a watch. But in that presentation, she talks about how you know, she identifies as an asexual lesbian. So she's romantically lesbian, but she's asexual.
Yeah.
And I was like hands on the table, like, what? Yeah, like, you know, that was like the flooring moment of, you know, everything that she said. She's like, I'm like, holy shit, I'm relating to you about something that, like, I felt has separated me from everyone around me for almost, like, at that point, more than half my life. And so it really was at, like, that point, which was not very long before we ended up forming the band and moving, that, like, I feel like I was finally able to address so many of the things that I had, like, willingly put myself through and, you know, these emotions that I had ignored or, like, misdiagnosed because I'm sitting there in this small town in Wyoming trying to diagnose myself as a 13-year-old girl. You know, that doesn't work,
well,
as it
turns
out. Well,
yeah, what's wrong with that?
But, you know, each of these discoveries is what I like to kind of refer to it as, like, puts everything else in perspective, and that's always such an interesting thing. And of course people change and then they grow and develop and everything else. But, like I only just recently feel like I understand what I went through, like even to any degree.
Right. Well, I mean, you spent the majority of your life under a dominant paradigm. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it would be like the story of the cave. Where the people are in the cave and they see the shadows on the walls and they believe that, you know, the shadows on the walls are benevolent gods that are bringing them things, and they think they have an understanding of the world. And then you come out of the cave and you see a bush and you see a rabbit and you see a tree and what the fuck is this? And there's the sun, and you start to recognize that all of these things that you had learned up to a certain point were only part of it. And I think that's why we're discovering as a society right now, I think people are getting a lot better at vocalizing when they feel different and when they are feeling like this doesn't suit me. And we're coming to understand that all it is a dominant paradigm. That's all it is. And sometimes empires need to be crumbled.
Oh, man, and I'm so ready. Of course, the internet's all like, well, we need to revolt. And I'm like, I'm down. You just tell me when I need to show up. But I'm also going to vote in the meantime, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I mean, let's calm down. There's still a lot of people up at the top that are not going away anytime soon. So how do you steer a boat that big, especially as a society? How do you do that? You do it by degrees, and you start changing people, and you start changing the people around you, and you change those people, hopefully. And you bring the empathy of your humanity to people's front door. And I'm trying really hard to believe that that is going to be the thing that changes everything, because historically that's been the way. You force people to reckon with you.
Yes.
Nothing's ever gone by from people being polite.
Unfortunately, I wish it were that easy. You know, I'm definitely the type of person that, like, oh, if I just explain where I'm coming from, you know, everyone is going to understand and, like, be on my side about this.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, no, that's not actually how that works, is it? Huh? Wow, okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll figure it out and put my foot down occasionally now. I'm working on those muscles, you know?
Like, yeah.
Building boundaries and figuring out when it's worth my time to explain myself and try to converse with somebody who's not interested in hearing what I have to say.
So how do you explain this to your parents, and then how do they take it?
To be completely honest, they don't know.
Huh.
It's...
Are you sure?
That's not something I know. I know that they don't know because...
You haven't talked about
it. This is not something I think that they would truly understand. Just based on the very few conversations we've had, you know, like, as amazing and as loving and as accepting as my mom is, she still has her moments.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it always comes in small comments that you realize, you're like, wow, why did I have an emotional reaction to that? And you sit down and you think about it and you're like, oh, that was kind of, that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember. So I had this funny thing happen. We went to a family reunion this summer. We drove all the way up to the middle of Minnesota. It was 15 hours one way, and it was quite the ride. But I have this little cousin who was running around, and he's got ADHD.
Yeah.
And he wasn't—I don't know his situation, but it was one of those things that nobody there really wanted to talk about it. But this kid was just running around, his attention span, like, and it's funny, I relate to him a lot, and there's other things that now I'm like, okay, I still haven't solved my puzzle. There's still some things I need to address and that I need to figure out, because I'm relating to this child very heavily, and, like, there were a lot of things that I was able to understand about him that everyone else was very impatient with him or didn't understand about what was going on. But anyway, we were just hanging out. I took him over to show him the dogs. Like, my parents had brought our dogs, and while we're around the house, he looks up at me, and I've got, I guess, for anybody listening, I've got very short hair, and I don't dress girly. I pretty much stayed in shorts and a hoodie the entire time we were there, but he looked up at me and he goes, "Are you a boy or a girl? I just can't tell." It was the first time that had happened to me, because, like, again, it's not like I dress really one way or the other, but
sure.
I'm still kind of a feminine lady.
Yeah.
But so it made me laugh, and of course I really got a kick out of telling his mom about it a minute later, and her face just got so deep red, and I was like, and everyone's like, "We are so sorry," and I'm like, "Guys, whatever," you know, in my mind, I'm like, "What I'm trying to let you know is that it's okay, and that
yeah.
it's okay for kids to ask these questions." And I want you all to know that I told him that, like, you know, I'm a girl, but it doesn't really matter. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that I think every human is fluid to some degree. I think this is something I think about a lot. Humans
yeah.
take themselves so fucking seriously.
Yeah.
And they, you know, everyone wants to they want to spend so much time figuring out who they are. And, like, I think labels are an amazing communication tool and an amazing diagnostic tool and amazing, like, self-discovery tool. But because of this, people think it has to be one way and it has to be that way forever. But
yeah.
I, at the end of the day, every single person starts out as a couple of cells that kind of, like, flattens out and folds into this tube, and then you're a butthole for a second.
Yeah.
Like, then that's what you are.
And that's
every
it.
Single person starts out that way. And, like, as far as genitalia is concerned, if we're talking about physiological sex organs, like, that all comes from the same stuff. I really, you know, we are so worried about finding the differences in things that humans are humans, and there's just a lot of gray areas.
Yeah.
As far as that goes. Like, there was a while, you know, while I was, like, realizing that I didn't have a, you know, while I was, like, really finally addressing, like, what my sexuality is, like, what's going on with me, and I'm, you know, finding all of these things, and I'm doing research, there was quite a while that I questioned my gender. You know, and there's a lot of things that I just don't take it very seriously. I just feel,
yeah.
I really tried to allow myself to feel how I feel on a given day. And so it was just kind of funny that, like, you know, this little kid is looking at me, and I'm like,
yeah.
I don't really know how to answer you in this question, because if I say what I want to say, I might get sent home today. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Because the real answer is maybe.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. And there it is.
So.
But ultimately,
yeah.
I mean, it comes down to, like you said, I mean, classification mm-hmm. and things like that. There are certain things that we haven't updated as human beings for millennia, and
mm-hmm.
why?
Well,
and they are updating. You know, I've seen the growth of all of this just in my lifetime,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that we are starting to reach a tipping point where people are starting to have more acceptance
mm-hmm.
for things than we'd give them credit for. My mom came out on the right side of the transgender issue,
mm-hmm.
and I say issue like it's an issue, but
yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, it was a thing I was not expecting at all, based on any previous information,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, she had a minute to think about it, and she was like, I don't see how this is any of my business.
Yeah.
And if just
exactly.
because I just because I don't understand it.
Yes.
It's like, okay, well, that's perfect. You don't have to understand
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I don't understand it. And I bet a lot of people don't understand themselves. And that's mm-hmm. all right. But recognizing that all we have to do is start recognizing that all of these labels that have served us so well for mm-hmm. so long no longer are.
Not really.
And sex might be binary, but gender certainly isn't. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a spectrum. Sexuality mm-hmm. certainly isn't. It's mm-hmm. that's certainly a spectrum. I think everybody's got all kinds of everything going on. So, I mean, whatever your chromosomes are telling you, mm-hmm. even that is probably subdivided in a lot of different ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this is something I've brought up, too, in that I really wanted to bring up because during that trip while I was there and I was telling everybody about what happened because I thought it was so cute and funny. And,
yeah.
You know, my mom made the comment and she's like, well, I think that there's just boys and girls and that's how it is. And that, you know, that maybe people are confused about who they are, but like at the end of the day, there's just boys and girls. And I'm like, I really had to like bite my tongue in that moment.
Do you think she was trying to be helpful?
I don't think she was. I think both of my parents right now are very much at a point where like, this is how we are. We figured out what we like to do and we're going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
And it's great. And I'm really happy for them as far yeah. as that goes. Like, you know, it's been really great to like watch their relationship because like in the last couple of years, I've been able to see from a distance that like their relationship is getting stronger. Like my mom just sold the business. They retired. They've been traveling around in a camper and being snowbirds. Yeah. I'm so excited for them.
Yeah.
But so that to me was more of a, she finally felt like she could actually express her opinion. And so for me in that moment is like, do I push this issue or do I actually just like let her voice her opinion for like freaking once? You know what yeah. I mean? Because so like there's a balance, but like
picking your battles, like honestly, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but mm-hmm. is there a part of you that doesn't want to push that issue because you don't want to find out for sure where she is?
Oh, definitely. That's probably almost the entirety of it.
The ambiguity allows you to keep loving her.
Yeah, which is kind of a terrible thing to like voice, but yeah, like there's a lot of stuff where it's like, even now as an adult who is trying to really accept myself and figure out what myself, I can't even imagine what it would do to me to have my mom not accept that.
Yeah.
So even now, like, it's hard for me to imagine, like, what if I did go to my mom and tell her that I, you know, for about 6 months, I thought I might actually be, like, a boy. And, you know, like, that I grew up and I did what I did. Because my mom was very frustrated with me for my dating habits, too. So there was a lot of tension early on, too. So how do I go to her later on and tell her, well, I was doing that because, in reality, I was asexual and I was trying to figure out what was wrong with me? Because that kind of invites this whole idea of like, well, you shouldn't be mad at me. You should feel sorry for me. Or, you know, but that being said, too, I don't know if she would believe it.
Yeah.
Even if I told her, you know, completely, complete, pure honesty, exactly everything that I felt and experienced through that time, because I don't believe that she would believe me, I don't think it would make a difference. And I would just rather work on the good parts of our relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's very emotionally aware. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, if it's a relationship worth saving, you can't really let other people bully you into forcing that relationship to get awkward.
Yeah.
Because you've made a decision, and so is your mom in a lot of ways. You've made decisions about how it's going to work so that it stays healthy and stays good. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's really not your job to manage her expectations of you.
Yes, exactly. And that's something that, like, it's not so much that I'm going out of my way to hide these things
certainly.
About me from her. It's more like it just doesn't really matter in this moment.
And that's completely your decision.
Exactly. And that's something I really had to, like, accept for myself as well, is that at the end of the day, at this point, I am an adult. I am not her 6-year-old child. I am not... She's not my boss. She was for a little bit, but she's not now.
Right.
She's not my boss. I don't live with her. We don't live in the same state. It's not really her business at the very end. This is not something, you know, I have not necessarily been incredibly vocal about these things, like, on my social media, you know, and everything else, which to some degree has, like, made me, sometimes I kind of battle with feeling guilty about it, because you see all of these people in, like, the LGBT community that are really, like, championing, like, you know, we need acceptance, we need to explain to everybody what's going on so that they accept us and everything else, and it's like, well, that's great, and, like, I'm really, really glad that this is happening. The amount of knowledge that is available now, without it, I wouldn't be where I am, at the very bottom line, but that's... At the, like, that's so personal. You know, you don't have to explain yourself when you're a heterosexual.
You don't have to
explain yourself. And it, like, there's some weird shit that goes on in heteronormative, like, relationships anyway.
Yeah.
But people don't talk about that. They don't go, like, well, I have this and this kink and everything else. You gotta accept it and understand it.
Yeah.
And not to compare to sexuality to kinks. That's not what I'm trying to get at here.
Of course not. But I get what you're... I get the point that you're trying to make on that. And for people in that community... I certainly understand it. I mean, it's when you haven't yet received your equality, you have to be loud. It's easier to be loud as a unified group to be reckoned with.
Yes.
But it's hard to be an individual, because individuals can be hurt. They can be personally attacked and discussed, and it's hard to be an individual person. As a group, it's a lot easier to stand shoulder to shoulder in solidarity.
Yes.
But when you're talking about you...
Well, and the other side of this is my experience with the community has been entirely digital. I've only read, and I haven't even, like, had a phone conversation with another person that, you know... Of course, I have friends who go through things. Like, we talk about... I have friends I've talked about my experiences with. But at the end of the day, like, this community and anyone who has identified themselves as, like, being a part of this community to me...
Yeah.
I have not ever had, other than that one girl in that class... That was the only time I had really interacted as, like, more than just an acquaintance for any amount of time...
Right.
...with another person... in the context of speaking about sexualities, you know, so I don't feel like, even, sure, it exists on the internet, and
right,
I have that information available to me, I have those stories available to me, I have those resources available to me, but to this day, I've never had a physical community.
And you're almost still a minority within a minority.
Yep.
Because there's, I mean, there's no asexual mingle.
Nope.
You know?
Not really. So, and that's something, too. I mentioned, like, change earlier. I'm not even sure about that anymore. So, you know, like, it's always
and
going to be changing.
And you're allowed to be fluid.
Exactly. And that's something I've really been focusing lately on, like, allowing myself to do. Because the way my brain works is, like, I have a very hard time with maintenance, is kind of how I like to phrase it. I do... one thing, I solve a problem one time, I do a task one time, and then I write it off, and it never occurs to me to do it again. So, I have a really hard time with chores, like, I have to, like, really work hard to take care of my fish tank, which I think this is part of why, like, practicing is such an issue for me. I hate doing stuff I've already done.
Right.
Just, period. And I think, to some degree, this really applies to a lot of other things about me. As soon as I, like, figure something out about myself, I'm like, oh, I'm this way. And then, like, realize later I'm uncomfortable with that, but it's because I never acknowledged that that changed.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's that always that gradual thing. I don't notice those. Not like anyone really would. It's not like I'm special in that regard, but, like, that's what surprised me so much about my real initial, like, I guess, major experience with depression was that it was so gradual. I had no idea it was changing. Mm-hmm. I was a happy... you know, motivated individual, and like that's how I was forever. And so when these other things were happening, it never occurred to me that I wasn't just that, because that's what I had already decided I was. And so that's something lately that I'm really trying to be aware of and allow myself to do, is to just go day by day. And like,
precisely.
And think about the things that I'm experiencing and acknowledge the things I'm experiencing, even if they're not what I expect to experience. But like paying attention to what's going on, but also like allowing those things to happen, you know. I've ever, like, I don't know if I've ever maybe not allowed myself, but just, like, the fact that I'm acknowledging it, that, like, yes, I can change. As it turns out, humans do that.
Yeah. And they do it really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
if you allow yourself to.
Exactly.
But like, it sounds like you've got a lot of that figured out. It's just a matter of, going with the nuances as they present themselves. And getting a little bit more comfortable with the lack of control that you're going to have over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a process.
Well, and I think that's, like, honestly the biggest thing that has helped me deal with, like, these mental illnesses as well. Is that, of course, like, it was an uphill after being diagnosed, but there's always going to be bad times. And there's always bad... But, like, more than anything, I've allowed myself to have to whatever degree that it is safe, you know, depressive episodes to, like, experience whatever I needed to experience, and then I can grow and move on from that and be aware of, like, what happened and what I felt, so I can talk about it and find resources and, you know, move on from there. But, you know, not ever feeling guilty or ashamed or anything like that, that these things happen, because also I believe to some degree, the, like, depression and anxiety are things that humans experience.
Yes.
Just period. Yeah. It doesn't matter if you think you are a perfectly healthy individual or not. At some point, you will be truly depressed. And at some point, you will have an anxiety attack. It, you know, does it, like, there will be that point. And I think normalizing that is going to, you know, again, like, this information and these stories that are finally being able to be shared is just totally invaluable. To, like, let other people allow themselves to also go through these things that are so scary.
Yeah. Because it is terrifying.
Exactly. And something that I talk about with people a lot is, like, regardless of what the moment was, and if, like, you think it was stupid or horrible or whatever else, everyone's worst experience is the lowest they've ever been. That is their frame of reference.
Yeah.
Everyone's, like, happiest day, whether it was, like, they finally, like, they had a donut for the first time, or they won $1 million. Like, doesn't matter what it is, that is their frame of reference for the happiest they've ever been.
Yes.
So, like, when we start comparing these experiences and, like, what people are feeling to each other and, like, trying to, like, quantify these things, that's where things really get tricky, and, like, where, like, labels really maybe can start hurting people as well. So it's like, okay, well, you're depressed right now, but you don't have depression, or, you know.
Right, yeah.
And maybe that's not an amazing example, but
But it is difficult to quantify emotion anyway.
Exactly.
Because it's practically impossible. It defies logic.
Exactly. And I honestly think that's part of the reason why I struggled with it for so long.
Yeah, of course.
You know, again, it was like, why didn't this make sense? Well, emotions don't really make sense. Like, you can try, but, like, sometimes your emotional responses to things aren't, like, a direct reflection of what you experienced. And that's just how it works. Sometimes, you know, whether it's hormonal, whether it's, like, stress levels, whether it's, like, you know, you can think of all of these different inputs, but, like, sometimes you cry because you see a cute cat, and sometimes you cry because your mom dies. Like, that doesn't mean that those two cries aren't both, like, valid, I guess.
You
know,
and they might be completely different for other people.
Yes.
Some people are more attached to their cat.
Yes.
That's just how it is.
Exactly.
I think the thing that might need to happen more with other people, like, we're sitting across from each other right now, and when you tell me what you're feeling and what your experience is and what you've learned about yourself, I don't see any reason not to believe you.
Well, exactly. And that's something that I suppose really bothers me about how other people interact with people when we talk about emotions is that they just blow it off. They don't, it's like, listen, like, nobody really, really likes to talk about this still. This is still something as a culture we're working on.
Yeah.
So when it does happen, like, take the time to acknowledge the person. Even, you don't have to have a solution for the person. You don't have to have, even have a response for the person, but, like, just making sure that you, like, they know that you listened and that, like, your opinion of them doesn't change, or, you know, whatever is, that you're still there for them at the very, like, throughout that whole thing, that they haven't lost you through this emotional experience, that they have gained the courage to talk to you about. And, like, if at whatever point someone gains the courage to talk to anyone else about anything, like, because everybody's experiences are different, anytime anyone talks to you about anything, it is so important to acknowledge that person. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, somebody comes to you with a problem, you don't have to be their psychologist. You don't have to be their counselor. That's not a good idea. Don't do that. But
don't do that.
Learn from experience. Like, don't do that. It's bad. But
sometimes people just need to be heard. And they need to be seen.
Exactly. You know, like, humans are, like, very community-based. Like, that's how we work. Like, if you stick one naked dude out in the middle of the woods, out of context, he's not going to make it. Like,
right,
humans worked because we had villages, and because we worked to get, like, we had hunting groups to go hunt the animals as a group. Like, we're really more like ants than we are most things.
Yeah.
You know, and because of, like, our ability to communicate is the only reason that happened. And, like, so that is, like, baseline, like, communication and expressing emotions are, like, what makes humans humans.
Yeah.
You know, so, like,
just, well, maybe we're evolving.
I
would certainly hope so. We've certainly had a run up to this point.
Logically speaking, there's no way we're not. Like, you know, this is kind of a little inside joke of mine that I just think is hilarious. But, like, the same people that are like, oh, you have your mom's eyes, don't believe in evolution somehow.
Like, yeah.
This is something that, like, just blows my whole mind. It's like, you can literally see how the offspring gain traits from both parents, but you don't, like, you can't think of that on, like, a longer time scale and how that would, like, change a species. Like,
yeah.
Because that's all we're trying to say, like, as far as evolution goes.
Well, I mean, just look at dogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we
literally
did,
like, evolved them.
We made that happen.
We literally did that. And, like, we proved that is a thing. And, like, anyway.
I believe the same thing happened with human beings.
Oh, very much.
I mean, it's just less obvious. There's a lot of stuff happening internal. But that's just people. And I'm really glad that we have such a diversity of people and that people are starting to get louder and starting to raise their hands and say, sorry, there's another option here. Sorry, there's another one. Oh, and there's another one. Oh, and there's another one. And then we're starting to realize, oh, all of this shit that it was for all these years, forever and ever, we're coming out of the cave.
Doesn't matter. Like, we can, there's this, all
other
cool stuff that we can do, like, to kind of speak to just, like, the nihilistic viewpoint that's going on in our younger generations right now. Just to, like, the flip side of that, the really neat thing is, like, there's nothing you can't do. There's, like, you get to live.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a, like, regardless of whether or not it has meaning, and I think, of course, that means a lot to people. There's, like, you know, if there's not a reason you're alive, then, like, why are you alive? And that's something I've struggled with in the past, and I've helped friends struggle, you know, with their struggle with this. But, like, at the end of the day, if you think about it nihilistically, it doesn't matter. Do whatever you want. You know what you're experiencing. You know what makes you happy. You know what makes you unhappy. And you get to more or less decide what you do with your time. So, like, do things that make you happy, like, until you die, because that'll happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, so in the meantime, like, why not? Like, why not? Sure, like, if you're thinking of things in, as far as, like, ending your life because there's no reason. But, like, there's no reason. So, like, why not? It's like a...
Why not live your life?
Exactly. It's like kind of a theme park attitude. You show up and... you're like, well, the thing I was going to is over here, but like, there's a theme park. Like, why not? Like, there's that ride. You want to try that out?
Yeah.
Hey, like, I don't know about that one, but like, now that we've done that thing, do you want to try that out? You know, and you just,
yeah.
It doesn't really matter. If you got nothing going on in a day, why wouldn't you go outside?
It feels really good to live through mistakes.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's definitely a thing, too. Like, the feeling of growth as it's happening, I think, is really, really scary for people. And it's scary for me.
Yeah.
Anytime something's happening, like that's like true terror, I think, to some degree.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I think it's kind of like throwing up. Like, obviously, throwing up really sucks.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah, and as soon as I'm done, I'm like, wow, I feel like half normal again. Like,
yeah,
I feel amazing.
I'm not sick anymore.
Yeah, I'm not, like, the thing in my stomach that really sucked and hurt a second ago is gone now. It's cool.
I can, sometimes,
like, relax.
Growth and pain are good for you.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, for the most part, you're on a really good path to figuring those things out.
I sure hope so. I mean, and this is something, too, that, like, we, like, as a band, of course, we make music, and, like,
yeah.
I am so stoked that you like our music. Like, that's so great to hear from anybody who's ever said anything positive or negative. We love the feedback, regardless.
Yeah.
But
well,
at the end of the day...
Well, it comes from that place, you know, that just have an opinion, don't be indifferent.
Yeah. Like, just have an experience, jeez.
Yeah.
But, you know, our whole point as a band is to remind everyone that it's, like, for one, it's okay to be different. Like, we are all four very different people, and we live together, and we make music together, and we've gone on tour together, and, like, we've done these really intensive projects together, and it's definitely not always easy, but we did it because we care about each other, and that's something that we really want to show to other people, is, like, well, we struggle, you know, and, like, things aren't always perfect, but at the end of the day, doesn't really matter because we love each other and we want everyone else to also, like, realize that that's pretty much more, again, it kind of goes back to, like, if you have the option, why wouldn't you? You know, if you have all of these, like, really interesting people around you, why would you spend so much time hating that they're different than you? Why wouldn't you be interested? Like, why are you different from me? You know, like, going back to, like, the science idea, like, from a scientific standpoint, that's really interesting. Humans are really, really interesting. Like, I love people watching. I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, what on earth led a human to, like, this point to be, like, in this moment, doing the thing that you're doing, dressed the way you are, with the expression on your face, like, on the phone call that you're having, like, that you're yelling on the phone or whatever else it is. Like, that is so interesting. And if you're constantly critical of those differences, that, like, that would, one, it would be so freaking boring that, like, what, that to me is, like, what is the point?
Yeah.
You know, if like, humans' strength is that we're different. And it's important that we nurture that and that we take care of people who are different than us. And that's something that we really try to really promote. Like, our mantra is unity over uniformity.
That's nice.
It's so much more important to be united as a community, as a group of people, as a family, than for everyone to be the same to get along. You know, love is not like a thing that happens to you. It's something that you do.
Yeah.
And it's a choice you have to make every single day, every moment in a day, with every interaction you have with another human. You have to choose to love them in that moment. Sometimes it's really hard. Granted,
yeah.
Like, I'm not saying any of this shit is easy, but, like, at the end of the day, like, love is the answer. Like, that's the only thing that's going to get us through this. That's the only way we're going to develop. That's the only way that, you know, if you're so worried about your life having meaning, that's the only thing that's going to do it for you, so far as I've been able to figure out. So, like, why wouldn't, again, it goes back to, like, why wouldn't you take care of these people to expand your community? It's, like,
yeah,
mutually beneficial. If you, like, these guys are the best friends that I've ever had because, for once, like, in a way, like, we all give each other not the same amount. That's not, like, it's not, because, again, everyone's different. But we all know where our intentions are. And that's how we're united. We want this band to work, obviously. And that's something that we've wanted from the start. But beyond that, like, I think we just want to do something really cool together and to show other people that, like, they can do really cool things together. And it doesn't really matter what struggles you're having or what setbacks you have. Like, I mean, I'm just a weird girl from Wyoming, but I'm a rock star now, like, but because I just did stuff and I found people that were good for me. And, like, because I kind of more or less inserted myself into the band, and that's not something I'm really shy about. But I started hanging out, and I'm like, hey Jack, I think you should maybe just play the bass instead of just going back and forth between piano and bass. Like, I can play piano. Can I do that for you guys? I also play the trumpet. Is that cool? You know? And then now here we are. But, you know, that we all give, and we're all aware of how much we care about what we're doing with each other. So really, like, that's the only thing that really matters is, like, that you are making a point to take care of the people around you. Because, I mean, again, if you want to think about it really logically, if there were no other people and nobody was taken care of, you would die. Like, you would, like, you would have none of your basic needs met and you would die. Because I don't know how many of you guys can build a house and, like, you know, hunt your own food and everything else.
Yeah.
Like, we got supermarkets, you know.
Yeah.
Like, thank goodness. But, you know, and that's, like, at a very logical level why it's so important to take care of our community and to, like, nourish all of these unique points in our community, because it's important to be a diverse community. But, like, emotionally, you're not going to grow if you don't ever see something different. You're not ever going to, you're just not ever going to grow up if you don't, like, see somebody else do something different from you.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you're a baby, you're literally wired to become an adult. You watch adults and you see what they're doing, and that's all you do for, like, your entire childhood is to figure out how to be an adult. Until you are one, and then you're still trying to figure it out. But, without any adults there, like, you know, without those other people there to be different from you, what do you have to base anything on? You know, so it's so important for personal growth as well to be exposed to these different things. But I don't know, I just, it's one of those things that I guess, like, I don't really know how to convince people that it's important to, like, love each other. Like, you know?
Well,
like,
I think if you were able to figure that out,
We're working on it.
Really have something there.
We are working on it. We're doing, like, we as a band are doing our best. And, like, honestly, at the end of the day, that is, like, way more important to us. If we can show somebody that, hey, you know, we're a Mormon and some weird kids and, like, we're, you know, oh no, we're like a Cancer and a Libra and, like, whatever. Like, again, we're all very much different people, but we make it work because we have a common goal and because we accept each other and we love each other, and you can do the same thing, regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that's can be applied to any level of thing, whether it's, like, a school project or it's running the freaking country. It doesn't really matter. Like, you have to love and support each other for anyone to, like, even just sustain, like, let alone grow.
Well, that's a lot to try to figure out.
Yeah.
You want to play a song?
I did bring a guitar on the off chance it came up. I wrote this song this last spring. And I suppose it's important for me to kind of preface that I wrote it for myself. Something I keep going back to is perspective. Like, being able to look at things objectively. And I think that's kind of where this song came from, because as I said, I'm singing it to myself, and it's called Seats. But I saw you in your chair, but I knew better. I knew you weren't really there. I heard you talking in your sleep, dreaming things would be better if only you weren't so weak. I know the pain of feeling broken is hard to overcome. So when you get too far, it's hard to know what is real and what is not. You wanna close your eyes forever, the world's better off. You wanna fade away, but please don't fade away. There's a saying, I thought it was true. It goes, be like the people around who take care of you. So I followed, I thought it was right. And I lost myself as I watched them go into the light. So if you say that I lack substance, I'd probably agree. 'Cause it's a little hard to grow as large when you forgot to plant the seeds. And you know time keeps marching onwards, with or without us. So if you need me to, I will wait for you. It's really hard to sing that sometimes.
Thank you very much.
Me too. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
What a beautiful song, right? And what a beautiful soul of a person. I really cannot thank Emma enough for coming down, being so vulnerable, so open, and so fucking awesome. Speaking of fucking awesome, go check out Fat Stallion. You can go to the website, fatstallion.com. Check out the new album, Diverted Eyes, and it is available everywhere streaming music is found. Go get it. That's it for this week, everybody. And I just want to say, whatever it is you're struggling with out there, whatever it is you think you can't do, I got your back, dog. I believe in you. Don't kill yourself out there.